Hello and welcome to Beauty Inside Out. I'm your host, Kimberly Snyder, nutritionist, wellness expert, and author. On this podcast, I share my experiences, insights, and knowledge with you on health, beauty, personal development, and wellness. Every week, we have interviews with amazing pioneers in their fields. So joining me in the conversation every week is also my dear friend, Tony, who is a health researcher out of Stanford. Hey, T, I'm happy that you're here in the same room as me again.
Me too. Yeah, it's so awesome to be here.
And hi, beauties. We are so excited to be back with you guys today. I know that the weather is getting much cooler for many of us. The wind is picking up and the days are getting shorter and shorter. And it's, you know, I just remember when I lived in New York City, T, and I, you know, there's this brief period when I got back from my around the world trip and I was scrambling and I was teaching yoga and, you know, just studying nutrition and running around. And I actually took this office job for like a short period and it just didn't work out like, for me. But I remember there would be days where I would go in the morning and I would leave in the winter. And I only worked there for a couple of weeks. It happened to be over the winter. But I would leave and it would be dark when I got out. And I remember just feeling very like, you know, sad and sort of depressed about it. And like, oh my gosh, like I don't get to see any sunlight. Like this is really hard. So what we want to talk about today is this whole idea of SAD, seasonal affective disorder, which is a very real thing. And, you know, we want to talk about it now as the days are starting to get darker and darker and give you guys some real tools and tips to help alleviate it. Because again, and you know, some statistics show the American Academy of Family Physicians estimates that as many as 20% of U.S. residents are affected, you know, wow. Even to a mild extent up to a much more severe, but 20%, you know, one in five is like a pretty significant number. So,
yeah.
So, T, first of all, have you ever felt this yourself? I mean, you're from California. You know, you went to Stanford, and you grew. You know, you've lived in Northern California. It's not as acute in California as other parts of the country, but you lived in New York for some period.
Yeah.
So, have you ever felt it in your own body?
Yeah. So that's what I was just gonna say. It's funny because you brought up New York, and I was thinking that was kind of like the one of the most memorable times where I was living in New York, and I'd started like in the spring. And then, you know, it was just like, it was warm. And then it was like summer, super hot in New York. Mm. And, you know, all the way through September. Then I remember in October one month, it was like, all of a sudden, I was like walking from, gosh, I was like, so down to like kind of Financial or something to meet a friend that I had, you know, in college. And I remember it was like, the wind was so cold and it was darker. It was like, all of a sudden, It was like, just like such an acute weather change from what it was just in September.
It felt abrupt.
Yeah.
You could feel it in your body.
You could feel it in my body. It was like darker. I was like, all of a sudden.
And then, in
like,
your mind.
In my mind, yeah. And from that point on and like the weeks that followed, I started to get like down and I was like, oh my God, I gotta get out of here. Like, I was like,
it's just, it's like natural part of conversations too, right? T, like
yeah.
Everyone's like, oh, it's so depressing. Like, it's like the word depressing actually comes into conversations.
I know. Yeah, it's weird. And actually that's, it's good that you brought that up because seasonal, it's really considered to be like a form of depression. That's the definition of it is that like a depression, a kind of mild depression that starts in fall and winter and then basically goes into remission in spring and summer. And so it's like this, you know, the seasonal sort of depression. And, it's interesting. I think like they're still not totally sure on all of the, from what I researched, and we'll link to like things in the show notes, the actual, like there's still some debate over like what are the causes, like what is it really the same kind of depression? Is it like, so there's these debates, but there's just obviously there's so many people that experience it. Like it's medically acknowledged.
Mm-hmm,
I think it's just, we're in the process of kind of like figuring out really what it is.
And we, you know, again, we can't change where we live necessarily.
Yes.
Like, we're all going to, like, pack up and move to, you know, Hawaii or, like, wherever where there's more sunlight at this point in the year. But there are things we can do. So there is research. There is help.
Yes,
you know,
definitely.
Especially, you know, for some of you beauties, you know, one of my best friends, T, in New York, Ilva, is from Sweden. And she would talk about how long, dark those dates
oh my
we
gosh.
Get. So it can get like, you know, super intense in, you know, parts of the world where the sunlight becomes very scarce. So one thing, T, I want to bring up first, and we know that this is so important on many different levels, from this disorder, from SAD disorder to just our general health, is supplementation with vitamin D.
Yes.
In the winter especially. There's actually a study, we'll link to this, published in the journal Nutrients, and it found that people that took vitamin D supplementation saw a significant improvement in their depression. So I just want to remind you, beauties, as you're getting into the darker months, depending where you live and you're not getting as much sunlight, we definitely do recommend vitamin D supplementation. And that can really, that can be just a starting point. Something that's easier to do is to take, you know, take supplementation regularly.
Yeah.
Going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, especially like where if you can't get sunlight, because one of the other remedies that we read about when we were researching is, there are actually like specific light boxes that mm-hmm. are just designed for seasonal affective disorder, and they're more full spectrum, but also with enough power to kind of like simulate the benefits kind of what you would get from like sunlight.
Wait, a box, see, like, is that found to be more effective? In the past, we've talked about the light, not a box, but just like a lamp.
Like, yeah, it's more effective. This is like directly shining into your face. It's like a light that you literally like stare into, and you get on it all the time.
You stare into
like,
it?
Well, like
does it light up your face good
kind
for
of,
selfies?
Yeah, but it's not like, it's not like aging or anything like that. It's just something that like,
oh, it doesn't have like the
UVs or whatever.
Yeah, oh, amazing.
But it's been shown to be pretty effective for that, and it's obviously a lot healthier than like going to a tanning salon or something else. Like,
wow, so it's like, it's literally light therapy.
Mm-hmm. Therapy, and it's like something you could just put on your desk and like you.
I want to get one.
Yeah, it's not that expensive. I think you can get a good one on Amazon for like $80, I think.
Wow.
And you know, obviously it'll last like years, and so that's another really, really good one. But the reason I even brought that one up is because you just mentioned vitamin D, and that's like not a substitute. You know, sunlight can replace vitamin, like true sunlight can help replace like vitamin D supplementation, or can be done if you're getting, you know, exposure. But with this light box, it's not a replacement.
The light box. That's important to say, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not a replacement for vitamin D. It's not a replacement.
So yeah, none of those lamps, you still have to take vitamin D.
Yes, exactly.
Vitamin D, you're only getting that really from the real sun.
Yes, exactly. So it's like you need, although I think.
What is it? How does it work? It just affects your brain?
Yeah, like the light stimulation, because I think the thing is that it's darker, but also like you mentioned, like in your office experience, we have a lot of this like fluorescent light exposure. Mm-hmm. That's like the only light that we're getting like all day if we're in the winter and we're just going to work kind of in the morning and then we're leaving after it's dark. And the fluorescent light is just a very limited spectrum. And so your body is basically like in your sensory kind of inputs for light are missing like a lot of the spectrum of light, and so that's just something that's just really important for humans to have.
Mm-hmm.
And so
yeah, this is like a broader spectrum, different wavelengths, helping
yes.
your body with its circadian rhythms, and
yeah.
I imagine like the
and
melatonin
doing that, exactly.
and hormones. Oh wow.
Yeah, so even for help sleep, because that's another one, is that I think without proper light stimulation, I think people with SAD tend to like start kind of drifting more into irregular sleep patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, using something like this to establish regular sleep is also really important.
Well, and that leads me to think of another one, T, which is sticking to a regular schedule. Is, you know, this goes back to the Ayurvedic idea of Dinacharya, like having daily routine. Like it's, you know, it's better for your mind, is basically what Ayurveda said, as well as better for your digestion. So when you start to feel like, oh gosh, like I can't control the light, you can stick to, like you said, to regular sleep times, getting as much rest and rejuvenation as possible, regular meal times, letting your body know what to expect, mm-hmm. putting that light box on certain times. So you're in this established rhythm can also really just help ward off depression, because you're in that routine.
Yeah, absolutely.
And again, we all know that sleeping less does not help with depression. So keeping that sleep going but also not over sleeping.
Yeah, sometimes, too much like kappa and like sluggishness. Like
sluggish, yes, but just, you know, which kind of leads to another point, which is how important it is to stay active in the winter as well. We know exercise is really important. There's certainly lots of research talking about how, you know, moving can help alleviate depression in general. So I think that, you know, this is where home yoga practice is really, really powerful. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten, you know, fully back into my home yoga practice. I had a little period where I was like, you know, because I work from home, I was like, sometimes I need to get out a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So I would go to a studio. But now it's just too much, you know, working on the next book, all the stuff with Bubby, his naps changed. I would try to sneak out during his naps. It's just like now I need his nap times to do like serious writing.
Yeah.
So anyways, for all these reasons, I'm just getting as much yoga practice as I can. Sometimes it's half an hour, my maps, and sometimes it's 45 minutes or whatever, but I don't have to have the driving time. So as it relates to this, when it's cold out and you get home from work or in the morning and it's dark and you don't want to drive anywhere, all you have to do is, you know, unfurl your yoga mat and you can have your practice right there. You can warm up, you can move your body, you can feel good. You just need a couple feet of space. You know, we have our Beauty Detox Power Yoga DVD for you guys, the course, which I would love for you guys to try if you haven't tried it already. I was just talking to someone the other day that was saying, oh, I love the practice and I love how I, you know, get to move around in a circular motion and I feel good. So another thing for you guys to try, again, the home yoga practice can be really powerful now.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, you know the history of yoga better than I do. Wasn't kind of part of how yoga originally evolved was, wasn't it like kind of giving these yogis the ability to kind of like exercise in like almost like darker confined spaces, basically, because you could kind of keep your, if you're meditating a long time,
yes,
like in a cave or something, like to keep your body kind of healthy and like,
exactly,
not from like atrophying.
Exactly. The asanas aren't, you know, in and of themselves the end goal. They're a worthwhile pursuit because they allow you to sit in meditation longer. You can, you know, keep your joints healthy, be able to sit in lotus position or sit cross-legged or whatever. And when the body is healthy, then your mind isn't distracted as much. So it is important to take care of the bodily temple. And so, great point, T, because in this regard, keeping the body healthy and moving and, you know, in a non-jarring way, but still, you know, it's still a rigorous practice.
Yes.
Beauty Detox Power Yoga DVD. I was like, you know, doing it myself, you definitely feel the heat building up and, you know, your breath is going, your heart rate is definitely going. But it keeps your mind on track. You know, we just know the body and the mind are so connected. So having that yoga practice is such a beautiful way to stay centered as the world is shifting, as the darkness comes in, we still have that inner light.
Yes, that's amazing. And kind of shaking off that stagnation that can kind of
beautiful, exactly,
build up in those months. Awesome.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Any other ones, T, you want to share? Any, you know, I would just encourage you guys, you know, all these sort of natural lifestyle methods before going straight to antidepressants, or, you know, just seeing what, how you can nurture yourself lifestyle wise. And of course, I also want to say from a food perspective, really, staying grounded and nourished. Still, we say in the winter, you can still drink the glowing green smoothie, but just maybe a little bit closer to room temperature. It's a great time of year to have soups and grounding, you know, root vegetables and all these warming dishes. We have a billion recipes on KimberlySnyder.com and in the Beauty Detox books. But also just really nourishing yourself from the inside is also very important.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I really love the Gigi Sow, like when you warm that.
Oh, the Gigi Sow,
the glowing,
exactly,
green soup. So if you don't want like a, you know, a colder kind of glowing green smoothie in the morning, you can warm it or you can make it into a hotter soup even.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I love that.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, T. Thank you, beauties. I really hope you guys try out some of these suggestions with the, you know, the timing now and the light growing, you know, just shortening a bit. It doesn't mean that we have to feel, you know, get down or feel blue for extended periods. There's all these powerful things that you guys can do. And you can really use this time as an incubation period. You know, this is sort of like taking a step back, thinking about goals, reassessing, and then we'll be able to really step forward as the light starts to emerge again.
Awesome.
So thank you. Thank you, Beauty, so much. Thank you, T. And we will be right back right after the break. Feeling bloated and constipated is a common problem that can happen to almost anyone, even when you are maintaining a healthy diet. Detoxy Plus is a powerful formula, an internal cleanser that combines magnesium and oxygen, helping to enhance elimination and regularity, increase detoxification, reduce bloating or gas, and leave you feeling lighter, healthier, and happier. Available on KimberlySnyder.com. Hey, beauties, welcome back for a very special interview of someone I absolutely adore and I admire so much. We have Keegan Kuhn with us today, who's an award-winning documentary filmmaker and co-director of the groundbreaking environmental film Cowspiracy and the current film What the Health, which I hope everyone has seen. And if not, please go on Netflix today and watch it. Keegan, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on.
So I love What the Health. It's been spreading like wildfire. I have to say that so many people that I would never think were interested in being plant-based or really interested in health have seen it, and they've come up to me and wanted to talk about it because it's been on the homepage of Netflix for so long. So can you tell us, like, where you are? I mean, is this bigger even than Cowspiracy, isn't it? It's really just gotten out there.
Yeah, it's been pretty amazing. It is bigger than Cowspiracy. I mean, while we, Kip and I, my co-director for What the Health, we're working on the film, like I said, this film potentially is going to be way bigger than Cowspiracy. And I think there's a number of reasons for that. Cowspiracy focuses on just the environmental impact of raising animals for food, where What the Health looks at the health impacts of eating an animal-based diet versus eating a plant-based diet. And because, sadly, we live in such a sick nation where, you know, the vast majority of people are suffering from either type 2 diabetes, obesity, heart conditions, hypertension, cancer, that it's almost impossible not to know somebody or be suffering yourself from a debilitating disease, chronic debilitating disease. So the film really is hitting home for a lot of people who are, you know, being inspired and informed to make, you know, radical lifestyle changes to improve their health and their loved ones' health and ultimately the health of entire communities.
One thing that struck me about the film that is so different than other food documentaries is really exposing the connection between health organizations and big pharma and big food companies, which isn't something that I think is really discussed a lot. You know, we talk about the government's ties with big pharma and big food and so on and so forth, but health organizations. So to me, that was a really eye-opening part of the film when you know, Susan B. Komet is putting breast cancer, the organization is putting pink ribbons on Yoplait yogurt because they're getting funding from dairy companies. And same thing with the AD, you know, American Diabetes Association, so on and so forth. Have you, since the film has come out, have you guys heard from these organizations? Have they responded? Have they changed any of their policies or the recipes they have on their website?
Right. Yeah, that was definitely one of the more shocking aspects of making the film was, you know, we saw all the statistics that were associated with, you know, high consumption animal food diets and the rates of, you know, heart disease, cancer, diabetes. And then when you go to the leaders of health and health information in our country, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, American Cancer Society, they all were recommending eating foods that were associated with the diseases they're supposed to be fighting and, you know, trying to prevent. And, you know, there's that, we couldn't wrap our heads around why are they telling people, American Cancer Society, telling people to eat processed meat when World Health Organization groups it as a group one carcinogen, you know, absolutely direct cause of colorectal cancer. And we found, you know, the funding. You know, we found that the American Diabetes Association was receiving hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars from processed food manufacturers who produce products that, you know, increase the risk of type 2 diabetes. American Heart Association was receiving millions of dollars from the livestock industry, fast food and processed food manufacturers, American Cancer Society, Susan G. Komen. Literally, almost every organization that we looked at was getting money from the very industries that were, you know, associated with the cause of these diseases. And we make the analogy, this would be like, you know, American Lung Association getting money from the tobacco industry. Nobody would think that was okay. They would say that's a major conflict of interest. And so we show that in the film. since the film came out, there has been a really positive response. American Diabetes Association put out a whole press release about the benefits of a plant-based diet and how a plant-based diet is one of the best things you can do to prevent and potentially even reverse type 2 diabetes, which is phenomenal. We're so excited to see that. Sadly, they still have these products, you know, animal products on their website and promote it to their members, but at very least they're showing that this information is out there and that it's important. The American Cancer Society removed some of the processed meat from their recommendations on their website, which we're really happy to see. They haven't gone full all the way yet, but they're definitely making steps, and we really want to encourage anybody who's a member of any of these organizations to write to them, to call them, to talk to them and say, hey, you're making the right steps. Keep going. You know, keep going, pushing towards a health-promoting diet instead of a disease-promoting diet. Sadly, the American Heart Association did get back to us and said, basically sent us a form letter, but an official letter that said, essentially, we recognize that meat is a common feature in the American diet, and therefore we encourage people towards healthy eating. Which, what does that mean? It's like saying, we understand that Americans smoke cigarettes, therefore we encourage them to live healthily. It's like, no. You would encourage people to not smoke cigarettes and not eat processed, you know, and particularly red meat, which has a direct correlation to heart disease. So progress is being made. It's not as fast as many of us would like to see, but it is happening. And I just really want to encourage anybody to tell these organizations and encourage these organizations to keep moving forward in a health promoting way. And I think that's what these organizations will respond to. They'll respond to their members and hopefully not to corporate interests.
Well, what about the Susan B. Komen Breast Cancer Society? Did you guys hear from them?
Yeah. So we tried really hard to get an interview with them. We got on a call with one of their main people, and, you know, obviously weren't allowed to record that call, but they admitted, they said, you know, well, we have, you know, gotten hundreds of thousands of dollars from Dan and Yogurt, which is a, you know, dairy producing company, and that has helped us to do funding for research, which, you know, here you have a product, you know, a whole dairy has been associated with an increased rate of women who have had breast cancer, a reoccurrence of cancer, and mortality. And it's pretty high. It's like 51% increase in breast cancer reoccurrence for women who eat just one serving of whole dairy a day. So, you know, you have that major conflict of interest. And, you know, Susan G. Komen, there are so many aspects of it. I mean, they did a campaign with KFC, which was pink buckets of fried chicken. And it was something along the lines of like, eat a breast, save a breast was like their slogan, right? And so, you know, who in their right mind could ever think that fried chicken was a health-promoting food? And whether it's associated with an increased rate of breast cancer or not, chicken, fried any food, is not going to be helping you fight, you know, cancer or very least obesity, which is, you know, has a direct correlation with cancer.
You know, and Keegan, for a lot of people I talked to, it was amazing how many people said to me, I'm going to be vegan from watching this film. And they would go along and maybe they, you know, they weren't able to maintain it 100%, but a very high percentage, like radically change their diet. It was so powerful. I'll hear a study about this saying, you know, we need to eat animal protein to get enough, whatever, you know, B12 or these certain amino acids. And they're like, I'm just confused. And so, you know, what would you say to them? Because I would say, oh, you know, sure, you can like nitpick and like find conflicting studies. But if you look at the support, when you look at how many thousands of studies are in support of all these nutrient dense plant foods, when you look at the statistics, when you look at the bigger picture, instead of honing in on one study here and there, the evidence is overwhelming. So, but that's me talking. Keegan, what would you say to people that are like, oh, well, I found another study that says differently about eggs, for instance, or some other part of the film?
Yeah. You know, and that's the big thing of the explosion of what the health is. There's been a backlash, right? There's been a big pushback from mainstream media and people in the dietitian world as well. They're saying, oh, this is misrepresented information, or these are cherry-picked studies, and here's a study, you know, that says eggs are good for you. And like what we showed in the film, anytime a study comes out that says, for example, red meat is good for you, or eggs are good for you, or dairy is good for you, look who funded the study. And there's a really good chance that those studies are going to be funded by the very industries that are promoting the product. So you can have an egg study that says eggs don't negatively affect heart function, funded by the egg board. You can have a study that says saturated fat isn't associated with increased cholesterol levels, blood cholesterol levels, funded by the dairy industry, leading source of saturated fat. You know, you have all of these studies who are funded and designed to promote a product. And so it's this misinformation, and we've seen this with the tobacco industry, did the same sort of tactic. They funded studies to try and, you know, discourage and confuse consumers to say, oh, well, if I see this one study says it's bad and this other study says it's good, I'll just continue to eat the way I'm eating, because who really wants to change? And then when there are studies to, instead of, say there isn't a conflict of interest in funding, it's really looking at the studies and how they were designed. And if they were designed to create a conclusion. So, you know, you could have a study that says, yeah, saturated fat does increase blood cholesterol levels. Well, how did they design that study? Well, they excluded anybody who had high cholesterol levels, blood cholesterol levels. Then they allowed people to be part of that study who were taking cholesterol-lowering drugs. And so then they were left with a population who was their study population that had this, you know, genetic, you know, fluke that didn't affect the amount of saturated fat they consumed and their blood cholesterol levels. And then they, again, had people who were taking cholesterol-lowering drugs. So, of course, that's like a totally, it's bad science to start with. It's a totally skewed study. And again, you're going to end up with really weird results that are going to say, oh yeah, saturated fat isn't bad for you. And then the media jumps on that. They're not going to look at all the research. They're not going to look at how that study was designed. And the media will say something like, oh, saturated fat is back, fat is good for you, and on and on and on. And the truth is that it's really easy to sell good news about bad habits. It's really a lot harder to sell bad news about everyone's habits. And so there's a natural resistance to not want to change. And all the criticism that the film has received too is, I think, and even people within the vegan community who have attacked the film for, you know, they say we're misrepresented the science. All the studies in the film are listed on our website, whatthehealthfilm.com. You can see the original source material. You can see that it's all peer-reviewed. It's on the National Institute of Health website. But then, too, the criticisms that come against the film, in order to criticize a film, you have to ignore the literally tens of thousands of people that have changed their diets because of it, who are no longer taking pharmaceutical drugs, who are achieving their ideal body weight, who are, you know, recovering from debilitating conditions. And I've seen this, you know, there's been, you know, very vocal people, particularly in like the paleo world, who have attacked the film. And you go through their feed, you know, whether on social media, and you'll see all of these thousands of comments of people who said, you know, you're attacking this film, but I've been type 2 diabetic for 10 years. I saw this film, and after 2 weeks, I no longer have to take my medication. I'm no longer type 2 diabetic. And so, again, it's this ignoring what people are actually doing. And when people attack this film, in my opinion, because it's not just the film, it's the information that's in the film, because people can attack artistically or whatever they want the film, that's fine. But when they attack the information and try and discredit, I think they're actually doing harm. They're preventing people from recovering, and potentially from people from, you know, people potentially will die because they continue to eat a diet that is not health promoting. So I think it's really irresponsible for people to promote an animal consuming diet when the science, as you said, is overwhelmingly positive towards eating a plant-based diet and away from eating an animal-based diet.
Well, it's overwhelmingly there. And, this Plant Paradox book came out, which, you know, is really another iteration of paleo, or like a low carb, like animal pushing diet, basically. And it's because, like you said, people want to hear what reinforces what they're doing, because it's really challenging when people say, oh, like, you know, some people aren't ready yet to see, oh, well, this way that I've been eating since I was a kid, maybe I need to make change, or maybe this isn't the best thing for me. Which is why I think it's amazing. Like it's stirred up so much. I can just say for me, I've had, I've talked about the film a lot, and I've done press and media about it, and only one outlet kind of
you know, was like, oh, well, what do you think about this? And kind of nitpicking the studies. It's been overwhelmingly positive what I've seen. And again, so many people have come up to me that are like, holy crap. Oh, I have to tell you, Keegan, that someone that's very high up on the chain of a steakhouse, I don't want to say the name, but it's a huge steakhouse chain that's national. They came up to me at an event and said, I saw What the Health. And they said, let's go to lunch. Let's talk about this. And this is like my whole world. I'm so confused. But he wasn't like, oh my gosh, like, I don't believe it. He was like, oh, like, this is what I do for a living. And so, you know, like, there's people that are open, and maybe we can create change at higher levels. I mean, it's just amazing that this film is out there. And I, you know, Keegan, it's just, thank you so much for putting this out, because it takes a lot of courage to talk about these things. And what I want to say about the studies too is it's confusing for people, but when you watch the film and, like we said, you see the funding from these organizations, that is an eye opener for people to say, oh, I can't blindly trust the American Diabetes Association. I have to look around, like, see what's really best for me. And I think, independent of the studies, people just knowing that there is a relationship and there's funding that goes into these organizations from food companies is vital knowledge for everybody to know, you know, no matter what they do with that. I think that's really important for people to understand that.
Well, thanks. I really do appreciate all of that. And yeah, I think it is important for people to understand that, you know, these health organizations are receiving funding from food industry, but they're also receiving millions of dollars from pharmaceutical industries. And that's a huge part of it too. You know, why would a company like Pfizer give millions of dollars to a health organization like American Diabetes Association when they produce a drug that is for treating type 2 diabetes? You know, that's a why would you do that unless your motivation is to not get people to find a cure for type 2 diabetes? And a cure for type 2 diabetes, you know, isn't going to come in the form of a pill. It's going to come in for lifestyle, which is primarily diet, in my opinion. And I know most of the physicians that we interviewed in the film would agree with that. And so there's a major conflict of interest. If you're getting money from, you know, again, pharmaceutical companies that are making billions of dollars off of drugs, why would you promote anything other than drugs to solve that problem? You're not going to, you know, encourage lifestyle changes, because who's really making money off of lifestyle changes? You know, it's not like the broccoli industry is pushing really hard and spending millions of dollars funding health organizations to encourage people to eat more broccoli. We all know that we're supposed to eat more plant foods than we are supposed to eat animal foods. Every health organization in the world would suggest that. And yet, again, you're going to have American Diabetes Association have, you know, bacon-wrapped shrimp on their website as foods for healthy living. So,
well, Keegan, are you guys still, can people still do screenings of the film? Like, how can we support it? Just tell everybody to go right to Netflix. What's the best way to support the film now?
Awesome. Well, thanks. Yeah, people can organize screenings anywhere in the United States and actually around the world as well through our website, whatthehealthfilm.com. There's a screening link where you can get a license to show the film. You can watch it on Netflix. You can see it on iTunes, Amazon, pretty much anywhere you stream films, you can watch the film. You can also watch it on our website, whatthehealthfilm.com. The film has been translated into 25 languages and dubbed into 4, German, Spanish, Portuguese, and Mandarin, because we want the film to be as accessible as possible to everyone around the world to get this information out there. Because Kip and I's feeling, my co-director, our feeling is people need all the information to be able to make informed decisions. And it's not about telling people how to live their lives. It's presenting the information and allowing people to make their decision for themselves.
Exactly. Well, you know, Keegan, I have to say that I did a screening in St. Louis, Missouri, right in the heart of America, a couple months ago, and it was really shocking for people. I think some people were just flabbergasted, and some people were like, wow. And I went back to St. Louis a few weeks ago, and I saw some of the people and just, you know, people I didn't know really well. It was, you know, a decent-sized screening, and some of these people, Keegan, were like, you know, were 80 to 90% vegan. And this is like, you know, and they said that they went to a local sandwich place right in their little suburb of Missouri, and they demanded that there's more plant-based items. So I went there and they had vegan soup, and they had cauliflower and Brussels sprouts and all these vegan salads on the menu. So it is true. Each of us can enact so much change and use our voice and speak, like you said, Keegan, to these health organizations and just to local restaurants and local places and share neighbors, like share how we eat and share recipes and talk about, oh, you know, I'd love to see this on the menu, or I'd love to see you carry this more in the market. And it really is powerful. It really is demand based.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it is. It's amazing to see how restaurants in particular are responding to the film. And you know, people, it is a big jump. You know, oftentimes you go from a standard American diet to a plant-based diet. That can be a challenge. And we want to make that as simple as possible. Obviously, you have incredible resources to your listeners and to people who are interested. We also produced a cookbook, a What the Health cookbook. And then we teamed up to create a What the Health meal planner. So on our website, whatthehealthfilm.com, you can sign up for our meal plan, which you get three recipes every single day, and they're tailored to you and your needs or your family's needs based off of how much time you have to cook, budget, food preferences, food allergies. And they're created by registered dietitians. So it's this total health promoting way of living. And again, it just takes all of the guesswork out of it. You can know that you're getting everything you need every single day based off of your needs. And that's been a hugely helpful tool to people who are trying to make that transition, whether, you know, 75%, 80% or 100% plant-based.
Yeah, exactly. Like some people, they go 100% and then they slip back a little bit, but even 70, 80% plant-based is amazing, like amazing on so many levels. So, last quick question, Keegan, I just adore what you guys are doing. I think it's so, so vital, the work that you're putting out in the world. And I talk about your work all the time, but I would love to know, besides with the health, which is still so new, do you have any other projects on the horizon? Anything we can look forward to?
Yeah. Well, thanks. I do have a new film that I'm working on, getting really close to finishing right now. Hopefully it will be out some point early next year, and it's called Running for Good. And it follows an incredible 3-time world record marathon runner named Fiona Oakes from Essex, England. And she is this incredible athlete. She's the fastest woman to run a marathon on all 7 continents and the North Pole, both in cumulative and elapsed time. She's done basically every extreme race in the world, from the Antarctica ice marathon, breaking course records there, to the Atacama Desert, the highest marathon in the world, 14,400 feet, Marathon de Sable, just incredible athlete. But the really phenomenal thing about Fiona is that when she was 16 years old, she lost her right kneecap due to a degenerative knee issue. And she was told as a teenager she would never walk properly and she would absolutely never run. And she's gone on to do all these incredible feats of human strength and endurance. But not only that, she has been vegan since age 6 years old. And she takes care of 400 rescued animals every single day at her sanctuary. But she doesn't have enough land to take care of all the animals on one property. So she leases out 4 other properties. And she literally runs between those properties to take care of the animals. So she runs 20 miles a day while taking care of all these animals, pretty much single-handedly. And again, while breaking, you know, world records and incredible feats of human endurance. So the film is following her through her life while she also runs Marathon de Sable, which is considered the toughest foot race in the world. It's a 156-mile race through the Sahara Desert, 6 days, self-sufficient. You have to carry all your own food, clothing, everything you need for those 6 to 7 days. Yeah, it's phenomenal. And Fiona ran it this year. And it's a really powerful, I think, inspiring film. Whether you're interested in athletics or not, whether you're interested in plant-based living or compassionate living, because Fiona does all of this to promote veganism and to promote compassionate living towards humans and non-human animals, and to break the stereotypes that veganism holds you back from any sort of physical activity.
Amazing.
So that's, if anyone's interested in checking that out, they can go to runningforgoodfilm.com and you can see the trailer there.
Okay, great. And we'll link to that in the show notes as well. Otherwise, you know, we'll also link to whatthehealthfilm.com and also cowspiracy.com. If you guys haven't seen that yet, that's also amazing. So we have lots of great watching for you guys, lots of great documentaries. Again, I just encourage you guys, if you haven't seen it yet, check it out. It'll change your life. I've already seen What the Health several times because I keep having screenings and showing people. And I feel like I learn more every time I watch it. So thank you again, Keegan, for your amazing work in the world, for being so courageous. We appreciate you so much.
Well, thank you. Likewise, thank you for everything you do and really helping people, you know, live more bountifully and well for their lives.
Yes, we're doing it together. So thank you so much. Thank you, listeners. Please share. Please watch the film. Please check out the show notes.
Okay, beauties, here's the tip of the week. Get rid of 5 items of clothing you haven't worn in the past 6 months. This is something that can feel so freeing, doing a closet detox. You can donate your clothes that are still in good shape to a local Salvation Army or a clothes drive. And by clearing out space in your closet, you're really going to help free up energy just the way that you feel when you throw out old food, old canned food, or things that you wouldn't eat anymore. So try doing it throughout your home, outside your kitchen, starting with your closet today. Okay, beauties, I will be back with you on Thursday for my Q&A session show where I answer questions from the Beauty Detox community. To submit your question, please go to KimberlySnyder.com/AskKimberly. Thanks so much and see you again soon. And always remember, progress, not perfection, as true beauty comes from the inside out.